watches I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else. And as we go riding.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, and WXXC Truxton. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. The battle to save the Finger Lakes National Forest is not only about preserving the beauty of its 16,000 acres. It is, on another level, a battle about local control versus federal policies, an affirmation of rural life over industrialization, a definition of democracy that includes a community's right to self-determination, and a recognition of a shared system of values that places quality of life and environment above profits and markets, an understanding that there are some riches that money can't buy, but that the quest for money can destroy. In the first hour of the program, we're going to air an extended discussion we had with four local people who are working to stop a plan to drill for oil and gas in the Finger Lakes National Forest. We'll hear how the campaign is faring, how they've mobilized to use the democratic process, and the conflicting values that the struggle has brought into focus. In the second hour, we'll bring you the first installment of our new series, The Wizards of Money, an explanation of the workings of the monetary system that underlies global capitalism and has given rise to entities such as the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the World Trade Organization, whose actions have sparked a worldwide resistance movement which raises many of the same issues that have come up in our community in the course of the battle to save the Finger Lakes National Forest.
Trot in this dark here, and robbing the rich is for worse or for best. They take it by stealing and lying and gambling, and I take it my way, my shiny black.
The Finger Lakes Forest Watch Congress was formed by a group of residents of Tompkins, Schuyler, and Seneca counties to stop the proposed drilling for oil and gas in the Finger Lakes National Forest. Last week, the Seneca County Legislature joined Schuyler County, the town of Lodi, and the town of Hector in opposing any drilling. Yesterday, we spoke with four community members, Baron Argetsinger, Kathy Engel, Larry Reverby, and Jesse Strock, who have been working with the Finger Lakes Forest Watch Congress to stop the drilling. They had just returned from a meeting with Representative Amory Houghton, who is the member of Congress for the district where the forest is located. Houghton had promised to seek support in the House of Representatives for an amendment that would ban oil and gas drilling in the forest forever. U.S. Senators Clinton and Schumer have already sponsored such an amendment in the Senate. The activists requested that we conduct the interview in the forest itself to serve as a tangible reminder of what is at stake. At a tree-shaded picnic table near Foster Pond, where people were fishing and dogs were enjoying a swim, we spoke about the progress of their efforts and how the struggle to preserve the forest fits into the larger picture of people demanding to control their own destinies and to make decisions on how they live based on their values as opposed to someone else's profit motive. Jesse Strock began by explaining the sequence of events leading up to the present battle to save the forest.
Back in 1998, two oil and gas companies approached the Bureau of Land Management, which controls the subsurface rights to the forest, and they asked for leasing rights. So the Bureau of Land Management then came to the Forest Service to ask them to do an analysis on this because the Forest Service controls the surface rights. So in March of 99, a scoping letter was issued announcing the proposal for leasing of oil and gas in the Finger Lakes National Forest. This went out to people on the NEPA mailing list, which is a list you have to call the Forest Service to get on. It's part of the National Environmental Policy Act that requires the Forest Service to put this mailing list out. So when people found out about it, they wrote comments by the hundreds. I think there were 600 written comments received, and maybe another 300 or 400 other comments. And the Forest Service never received this many comments before. They usually got maybe like, you know, 10 or 12 on a project. And this really bogged them down and slowed them down, because by law they're required to consider all of these comments and put them into the public record and put them into their analysis. So many meetings later, they had a lot of public meetings. They finally came out with a draft environmental impact statement this past May of 2001, you know, almost 2 years later, which analyzed environmental impacts, analyzed comments they'd received, and kind of put together this, and social and community impacts as well. And this is put together this big, you know, maybe 600-page document. It's supposed to analyze all the impacts of this proposal. That's kind of where we are right now, is commenting on the draft environmental impact statement, which is also required by law, and which is also entered into the public record.
Well, the Finger Lakes National Forest is actually a relatively young forest. It hasn't been around for very long, has it? What do you think was responsible for that immediate outpouring of commentary on this? Anyone?
Larry Reverby, I wouldn't call it a young forest. It represents land that was foreclosed in the 40s and was set aside as a grazing area, as a national, as a forest, but not a national forest, as a land use area for many, many years. And in the late 80s, maybe 85, it was made into a national forest, or designated a national forest, because at that time there was a threat to sell it by the Reagan administration. And the people of this area protested this vehemently, and it was designated a national forest and put into the Green Mountain National Forest Range. So there's been a lot of concern about it for many years, and it's been part of this area, part of this neighborhood, if you will, for quite some time.
Jesse Strzok, in reference to how it got out, I wouldn't say it was a student movement, though the students were involved. I myself go to Cornell University and have been involved with this. I've been following it for about 2 years now through the student groups. But we collected a few comments on the scoping letter initially, but not nearly close to what was received. I think people in the community were aware of they were on this NEPA list, and they found out about it, and they were already, you know, this community is interested in this forest, as Larry said. They mobilized to make it a national forest, and when they found out about this oil and gas drilling proposal, the word just spread. One local group, the Friends of the Forest, helped spread the word back then, and a lot of people are in that group, so I think word of mouth just kind of got it around, and the community was like, we don't want this.
Baron Argetzinger. I think that a lot of the support coming from the local communities on surrounding this issue was derived from the passion that so many people have for this Finger Lakes National Forest, and as Larry commented earlier, how the local communities galvanized around preserving this the Hector land use area and putting it into a national forest. And so when the proposal for oil and gas drilling came out, people were very concerned about the effects on the community, the effects on the forest itself, and people spoke their voices and became involved in the process that has to go through.
What are the concerns that people in the community have? You've talked to thousands of people. What are they saying?
Many of the concerns, there are many concerns. There are environmental concerns. There are long-term concerns, economic concerns. The draft environmental impact statement states that there's a possibility that local governments would have to borrow money to maintain roads, that oil and gas operations would have quite a potential to degrade and we'd have to borrow money until the revenues from the oil and gas drilling came in, and that may not happen until if a pipeline would have to be constructed through the forest, which was also a major concern, if that was actually to happen.
Well, this is Kathy Engel, and I live here. I'm part of the community. A lot of the concerns that people have, I think, goes back to your former question about where the passion comes from. Because like Larry was saying, this is forest is comprised of land that was formerly farms that were foreclosed upon after World War II. And this land was bought by the government for $3 an acre. And they say it was willing buyer, willing seller. But a lot of people just had no choice. So there are many people alive now that are involved with us in fighting this gas drilling issue that remember this national forest. They remember it as Hector Grazing Association, and they also remember it as just what they called over the hill, where you would go to pick blueberries and have picnics. So when we first started, we thought we needed to be very moderate and to not alienate the locals and make them think we were a reactionary or radical group. And when we started having the public meetings, especially right here in Hector, in the Logan Community Building, which is right, a very old building. There's not even any toilets there. There's no running water there. But it's in the heart of this old community. And we met the older people that lived here. They were the most militant people that we've come across. They told us we shouldn't be messing around, you know, with all these letters and stuff, that we needed to march down there to the ranger station and have a demonstration and, you know, really let them know that we weren't going to let this happen. I mean, it was these people that have a whole lifetime of experience of mistrusting things like this, where the government and the gas companies are coming and saying, we're going to bring money to your community. This is going to be a good thing, you know. And everybody is saying, no, you're going to come through here and, you know, in the end, our way of life is going to be lost. There's going to be very little revenue to the community, and the future of our children is going to be diminished because of the environment that we value, you know, the peace, the serenity, the land ethics. They're going to be destroyed. We don't want an industrial setting. We want things to stay the way they are. And I think that is where, you know, that is the major concern that has galvanized people, is a desire to keep this area undeveloped for the future. You know, it's our love of our children.
Well, I would like to add to that a little bit. This is Larry Reverby again, because I think it's worthwhile pointing out the way that this forest is set out and what it means to this area, so that you have a picture of what we're dealing with here. We're not dealing with 6,000 acres in the middle of a desert, or a huge clump of land where surrounding areas are already developed or anything like that. This is a very environmentally sensitive spot. It is a very small forest. It is situated on the top of the ridge between two lakes, both of which are pristine, pure sources of water for the population around us. And we're in an area that is not heavily industrialized. It's not developed, thank God, if I may say that, because that happens to be the way that I like it. But it is not set up for other industries other than wineries, farming, tourism, and general appreciation and use of this kind of pristine area. So when you say that you want to run a pipeline through 16,000 acres directly down between two lakes of water, you get a lot of people excited, because they all live around this area. They all have based their lives upon the way that this the state of this forest now, and they all get concerned about it and have for many years. This is stable, long-term place, and we care about this.
Okay, so I would say it appears that the elected officials of this area, to some certain extent, share this concern. It seems the group has had great success in getting the endorsements of elected officials on various levels. Can anyone address how that was done and what you faced there?
I think that a lot of that had to do, this is Baron Argetsinger speaking. I think that a lot of getting our elected officials to come out against the oil and gas drilling in the Finger Lakes National Forest had to do with the public outcry against this, and people spoke their voices and their elected officials listened. The first local resolution to be passed in opposition of the oil and gas leasing was in Schuyler County. And the next day, the town of Hector passed a resolution opposing oil and gas drilling. The town of Hector contains two-thirds of the national forest. And it was very important that Schuyler County spoke this way and represented their constituents, and they represented the people who live in this community who would be affected by this oil and gas drilling. Seneca County, which contains about one-third of the forest, also passed a resolution, as did the town of Lodi, which is the other township that contains the rest of the national forest. They all passed resolutions supporting the no-action alternative, the Alternative 4. And what I was saying about Schuyler County being important is Schuyler County had the most to gain of the local communities in terms of revenue. Based on the Payments to States program, the local governments receive money based on the amount of national forest acreage in their respective counties. Because Schuyler County contains two-thirds of the national forest, they would get two-thirds of the revenues coming to local governments, and Seneca County would get one. A really important issue is that this revenue issue itself, the distribution of revenues, if the Finger Lakes National Forest were to be drilled on, would be the private corporations, the drilling corporations would receive 87.5% of the revenues, the federal government would receive 9.5%, and the local governments would have to split the remaining 3%. And like I said before, Schuyler County, with two-thirds of the national forest, would receive 2%, and Seneca County would receive 1%. And this is not, it's definitely something that is not, well, I need to see. These benefits would not benefit our community in any way. We don't want the money for oil and gas drilling on the Finger Lakes National Forest. Oil and gas drilling is not compatible with the way that the Finger Lakes National Forest is used right now, with so much hiking and camping, and it's so small it would not be able to absorb the impacts of oil and gas drilling. So I think that the local communities and the people of our community realized this very quickly and spoke out, and our elected representatives listened, and they spoke the people's voice. And that has happened in our local communities all the way up through our federally and state elected representatives.
As understandably supportive as the local governments would be, they actually have no impact to make the decision. The decision is made by the Forest Service, which is an unelected body. What is really needed to assure that this cannot happen now or in the future? And what have you been doing in terms of your organizing efforts on the federal level?
Larry Reverby again. The first part of that is the effect of the local governments. The fact that Schuyler County Legislature and Hector Township Legislature came out against this was very, very significant for the, we could call it the buildup of opposition and the expression of opposition. The fact that the local townships didn't want this was a very strong statement. They, when we had a debate with them, some of them came out and said, well, we have no power to affect this. Of course, legally speaking, they do not. The resolution did not say anything to Congress, you know, did not control what the Forest Service did. However, if the local people and the local legislative bodies don't want this, it says an awful lot. And from that, we continue to talk to people in Congress, and we got a tremendous boost, I must say, when New York's two senators attached an amendment to the legislation that's going through Congress now concerning oil and gas drilling. I don't know the exact title at the moment. That passed the Senate 97-2 and is now under consideration, will be a conference in September. So I think that those people heard this, Governor Pataki heard this statement from this area and responded to it and acted accordingly.
Yeah, this is Chris Sturr of Unwelcome Guests. I was wondering if any of you could talk about how the features of this movement that you've just that Larry just described, is that different from other situations? I mean, have you guys been trying to follow other similar efforts that activists have had to stop, say, gas and oil drilling in other areas? And does it, have you noticed that it depends on the level of local support?
Well, one group, Jesse Strzok, one group we've been working with a lot in the past and now is the Allegheny Defense Project, which watches the Allegheny National Forest in northwestern Pennsylvania. In their forest, the subsurface rights are actually owned by private ownership, by companies, and therefore they have the subsurface actually has priority to the surface, and for one, there's also not much public support of the ADP, the Allegheny Defense Project, there. So they have two things against them. I'd say that that's the most important part, is that in the Finger Lakes National Forest, the subsurface is owned by the people, and therefore, when the people speak out, they have a right to, you know, legally to say to stop the drilling, to say that we want to stop the drilling. I'd say if it wasn't for all the public support, we wouldn't be where we are, because that amendment that was passed through the Senate would permanently ban all drilling in the Finger Lakes National Forest, all leasing and drilling forever, unless Congress decided to change that in the future. The way the system normally works is the Forest Service has to decide what they're going to do. Part of the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, is to provide a number of alternatives for drilling, and most of these alternatives are based on where to drill and how much to drill, and there always has to be a no-action alternative. In this case, it's an alternative four, where they don't do anything, and that's the alternative we've been pushing for. But Paul Brewster, the supervisor of the Green Mountain National Forest and the Finger Lakes National Forest, has never selected a no-action alternative, and it's very rare within the Forest Service itself. So it was unlikely that alternative four would be selected. So this is why it's very important that this congressional bill passes in the House of Representatives. It's our strongest battle for this, and it's because of the public support and the public outcry that this has happened.
What is the timeline on the consideration of this bill? Do people have time to contact their representatives to urge them to support this?
Baron Argetzinger, the timeline for this bill is that it has already been passed in the House of Representatives. It's been passed in the House of Representatives, and it has also been passed in the Senate. And the Senate bill is the one that contains the amendment to ban oil and gas leasing in the Finger Lakes National Forest. The name of the bill is the Energy and Water Development Spending Bill. And the House and the Senate will go into conference committee to work out the differences between their respective bills, and the bill that they come up with will be sent to the president. And it is really important that folks contact their elected representatives and urge them to really support this small amendment that would protect the Finger Lakes National Forest from oil and gas drilling. I believe it is Title 3, Section 316 of the Energy and Water Development Spending Bill. Today, the Finger Lakes Forest Watch Congress spoke with our Congressman Amory Houghton from Corning. And Mr. Houghton has come out in support of not drilling in the National Forest. And he has also pledged his support for the amendment that will be considered when the House and the Senate go into conference committee. He has pledged his support on that as well. And so we're very thankful for all of our elected representatives for coming out and speaking for their communities and speaking the voice of their constituents.
Okay, if this particular amendment to the bill gets lost in the reconciliation process between the House and the Senate, what recourse do people have to make sure that, you know, every 2 years you're not fighting this battle with a recurring, recurring series of drilling companies or even the same ones attempting to essentially batter down resistance by continually putting people through this process?
Well, the other part of that that must be mentioned is that today is only a few days before the deadline for comments to be sent to the Forest Service to the person that's supposedly going to make this decision, Paul Brewster. We have sent many comments to him, and many other people can do so between now and August 1st. If the House and the Senate do not include this amendment, the process that the Forest Service has to go through will still be continued. Mr. Brewster has to make a decision as to which alternative in the DEIS the Forest Service will permit. Then they would issue a final EIS, a final environmental impact statement, and then we would have public commentary on that. There is also, in January of 2001, a new 15-year plan for this forest has to be issued. I would say that we would be set back if Congress did not approve this. However, we would have opportunity and would continue to deal with the Forest Service directly, and indeed we would go back to Congress again. I don't. The way the amendment is phrased now is that the drilling question would be discontinued forever, and they would have to bring it back up as another law to change that. So I don't. If it wasn't passed, yes, we would have to continue on and do it periodically.
Last week on the program, we covered this issue as well, and we read the five different alternatives. And we noted that alternative number two was the one that was marked as, quote, preferred. Who prefers this, and by what criteria do they deem that preferable?
Jesse Strzok, the Forest Service is the organization that chooses a preferred alternative. Paul Brewster would most likely be the person since he's a supervisor. I actually spoke with Mr. Brewster personally about why they picked this alternative, and he really couldn't give me a clear reason. He just seemed to say that it seemed to be the best one at the time, but that it may not be their preferred alternative in the future, and that in fact that any alternative could be selected, which could include the alternative one, which opens up 61% of the surface to drilling. So it almost seems that their decision was arbitrary.
This fact that you mentioned, Jesse, earlier about that the public owns the subsurface, does that affect the possibility that someone was telling me about the possibility that drilling on private lands could go in sort of diagonally to access gas underneath it, and does that affect it?
Well, that's the difference between alternative three and alternative four. Under alternative four, there is no allowance for leasing of any kind. So you can't drill horizontally from private lands under the forest, whereas under Alternative 3, you are allowed to do that. We are in support of Alternative 4 because there are still a large amount of surface disturbances that are allowed and would most likely occur under Alternative 3. And we think Alternative 4 is the only one is the best one to protect the environment.
In addition to what Jesse said about the differences between Alternative 3 and Alternative 4, Alternative 4 is a no action, and there will be no leasing on the federal land, the Finger Lakes National Forest. But under Alternative 3, the drilling horizontally, they would lease the land. Under Alternative 4, the draft environmental impact statement states that up to 96% of the gas in the National Forest could be accessed from private lands without leasing the National Forest land. That means that private landowners would be able to negotiate arrangements with drilling companies that would benefit them much more than the proposed drilling to drill on the National Forest. Because of the way that gas pockets are situated in the subsurface, they're kind of like domes. If you drill straight down on private land, some of that gas pocket may lie under the National Forest land. And if gas is extracted that lies under the National Forest land is extracted, the oil companies or the federal government could enter into compensatory royalty agreements and still receive revenues from any gas that was accessed from under the National Forest without leasing it, without any drilling on the National Forest, and without leasing it, and without drilling horizontally under the forest.
Well, to go back to what you said about the preferred alternative, this is in some sense a public relations ploy. The statement in the DEIS about the preferred alternative too reflects the statements that go along with it, that the forest has many trails, has many campsites, is used by many people, has many streams running through it, and vistas, etc. And in other words, it's a lovely place. And therefore, if we do anything, we don't want to disturb the main part of the forest where all of that is. So we're going to go into an alternative that just has a couple of grazing areas down on the east side of the forest where nobody goes, supposedly. This is the implication of this. And we'll still drill. We'll still do all of these things. But we'll try to mitigate everything by preferring alternative two. Of course, this opens the forest to not only the drilling, but the potential pipeline and the rest of it that would come once they started exploring. Let us not forget that this is an interim kind of thing. If they start this and find the gas, then they can do all sorts of things. So our intention is to preserve this area. They're going to drill in the adjoining areas, which are all around this forest, because people will do their own private leases. And if there's gas there, that's how they might as well get it.
This is Kathy. So about the question as who prefers alternative two, well, I think you could make a pretty strong argument that the gas companies prefer alternative two, because most of alternative two is above the county line in Seneca County, and it also happens to coincide with the area where most of the gas has been found. There's an east-west trend in this gas play. The National Forest is right in the middle of it. Since I live in the neighborhood, I know that a couple years ago, seismic trucks came up and down all the National Forest roads testing. They're doing seismic testing to try to understand what the formations are below the surface. And they've also done a couple exploratory wells in the past year on private property within a mile and a half of the National Forest. Also, in 98, when this original proposal was made, at that time, all of the grazing lands were excluded. Our 1986 Land Resource Management Plan excludes grazing land from being considered appropriate for gas drilling or exploration. There was a public review of that land resource management plan underway in 98, which was lost funding. And then in 1999, an amendment was passed which removed that surface occupancy stipulation from the grazing lands. That there was no public review of that amendment. It was considered an insignificant amendment. That's the wording they have for it. But those grazing lands that were added with that insignificant amendment comprise 5,945 acres, and there's another 1,000-odd acres that went along with that. So that's over 5,000 acres that was added for consideration for gas drilling. We heard from the forest supervisor at the public meetings that we say, what can we do to stop this? How can we just have them not drill here? And he says that would take an act of Congress. Any amount of acreage over 5,000 acres to be removed from gas exploration or development consideration on government land requires an act of Congress. And yet, here's this 5,000 acres that they put in with an insignificant amendment in 1999. So back to alternative two. Alternative two, is mostly grazing land, mostly north of the, in the north end of the forest, coincidental with the band of gas that they want to develop. Also, it was interesting that at the Seneca County meeting, after Schuyler County had come out against it, the town of Lodi had come out against it, there was a meeting in Seneca County of the Board of Supervisors, and there was only one person that was opposed to the drilling, and that was the town supervisor of Covert. Now, almost all of Alternative 2, the preferred alternative, is in the town of Covert. So, I don't know. That's just what I've seen and heard. And you can draw your own conclusion.
Okay, so we're talking about as many as 50 wells. What do these wells look like?
I could say some of the things about that. There was one that was drilled across the road from me. It basically sits on, correct me if I'm wrong, a 3-acre bulldozed flat pad, behind which is a brine pit lined with plastic to catch the runoff from the water and other whatever else they use to lubricate the pump as it goes down. They put up a tower, which I would say is 40 feet, just at a guess, 40 feet tall. They bring in trucks and trailers and tanks and a lot of equipment. The tower is lit. The drill goes on, and for 6-7 weeks, nonstop, 24/7, they run this drill, which you can hear from miles away. And also, of course, it's lit up for all that time. If they manage to go down 7,000-8,000 feet, which is why this is happening now, because the technology is available to go down that distance and find this and tap into this gas deposit. If they do that and find gas at sufficient pressure, then they cap everything off with a nice little valve, and then they tie this up to a pipeline so that the gas can be run out of the area into the national network. So the immediate disturbance is for a period of time. However, on the 3-acre, in order to set up the 3-acre pad, they've got to have the roads set up so they can go in and do this. And once they have the gas discovered, and the valve in there, essentially that area is finished as far as being a natural habitat for anything. And if they don't keep the valve there because they didn't find gas, which is in a case across the road from me, it's still finished because it's basically leveled, bulldozed, and unusable.
Well, when they're drilling, I'm not a technical expert on this, but when they're drilling, they either use compressed air or they pump mud down in there, and they pump all this mud back out along with the stuff from down underground and fluids. Anyway, all this stuff goes into a pit. It's 12 feet deep, 100 feet by 100 feet, and it's got a plastic liner in it, and the thickness of that liner is not stipulated by any law, and the draft environmental impact statement tells us that these liners can often tear or rip, and that's a common cause of could be a common cause of soil and water contamination, although they keep assuring us that there hasn't been any significant soil or water contamination. They also tell us that if there's periods of high precipitation, and we generally do have a very high period of precipitation in the spring, all the fluids in the reserve pit, some of them might wash out. There might be, runoff. So I think that those pits are, one of the worst part about it, because they are filled with toxic stuff. And there's a well that they've left now. They've abandoned the site. It's just a bunch of, bulldozed trees and gravel and miscellaneous trash laying there now. And some people have said, oh, but I saw some deer. There's some deer hanging around there. And, well, those deer are probably licking the brine, the salt, that was there from the reserve pit, which is full of every kind of muck in the world. So I don't see how the hunters around here that value the deer as venison, as a clean source of food, or, going to benefit from that drilling brine going into the deer?
Essentially, the drilling process, whether or not they find gas, leaves a long-term alteration to any site that this takes place. Basically, it trashes it. It's pretty obvious why people would object to that in the middle of a national forest. That's here for scenic beauty and, you know, camping and hiking and relaxation. One of the things that was mentioned is that, well, you know, local people can have these leases by doing this on private land. One of the things that came out in the discussion earlier on was a sense of caring about our local environment, its peace, its serenity, its beauty, its agricultural quality, its tourism industry. How would these drill sites on private land affect all these concerns? And what kind of is the community response more split in this area? What have you encountered?
In Schuyler County alone this year, there have been I think approximately 500 leases on private land, and the impacts of drilling on the forest land in private land are pretty much the same. You're going to be looking at the technical need for the amount of land, and you're going to have the drilling rig, and you're going to have the roads to get in there, and the possibility of needing a pipeline if there's enough gas found. However, it is the prerogative of the private landowner if they feel that they would like to drill for natural gas on their own land. That is their prerogative. However, as we sit here in the National Forest today, we are sitting in an area of absolute beauty and serenity, and we can appreciate it for what it is, absent of these the possibility of oil and gas exploration here. And in an area that is already inundated with the possibility of oil and gas exploration outside of this forest, it's absolutely necessary that we preserve the National Forest as a refuge in an area that that has the potential to be seriously developed for this oil and gas.
Yeah, and this is Jesse. This is going to become a serious issue along the entire East Coast. We have an article on our website that details how this play, the Trenton Black River play, possibly extends along the entire Appalachian Basin from Kentucky to the St. Lawrence. So I just actually got a message from somebody in Mississippi, which is not quite the same place, but talking about these problems going on there too. So the entire East Coast, it looks like I may have to deal with this very shortly.
If there's congressional action that says that there can't be drilling in the Finger Lakes National Forest, how interested will gas companies be in I mean, is it the case, as some people have claimed to me, that a lot of the drilling that's going on private lands is partly to see what the potential is for, you know, profitable drilling in the forest, and that some people have told me that the gas companies would much prefer to drill in the national forest rather than on private lands, because when they're on private lands, they have to sign contracts with the landowners that are less favorable than the kinds of situations that they can have, and they also are accountable in a somehow more accountable because they're drilling right, you know, next to people. And is that true? Or, I mean, is it possible that they would lose interest in the gas in this area if they couldn't use federal lands?
I don't know the particular exactly. I've heard that rumor, but if it's true that they're less accountable in the federal forest than they are in private lands, then they might as well throw this DEIS down the tubes, because 75, just to come up with a figure, 75% of this is how they're going to be so careful, mitigate every possible damage to any possible creature, any possible tree, and any possible vista or campsite that would be affected by this. If they are watching all of this more on private land, then it is only due to the fantastic supervision of the New York State DEC, and which I'm not deriding at all, But they might as well stop talking in this hypocritical way.
When drilling on federal land, I would have to say there are more regulations that drilling companies would have to go through because you're dealing with the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management and also state regulations. So because this is federal land, there are a number of layers of things that they would have to go through to obtain permits and to ensure that they would be doing this in a manner that is proper according to federal regulations and state regulations. So I would have to say that drilling on federal land would be more regulated than drilling on private land. In terms of profitability for the gas companies, it is that would have to do with the revenue breakups. And right now, if they were to drill on federal land, the arrangement is the gas companies receive 87.5% of the royalties, and government in general receives the other 12.5%. If they were to drill on private lands, private landowners would have the opportunity to negotiate with oil and gas companies to receive better returns.
Yeah, I believe the maximum allowable returns from the state are 25%, so the private landowners could get 25% royalties, where so the gas companies would only be left with 75%, where on the federal lands they could get 87.5%.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that the state has laws restricting or essentially guaranteeing that gas companies get 75% of the revenue if they drill on someone's private land?
Yes, that's correct. The federal government says that it's always 87.5%, and the state allows for a minimum of 75%.
So that means if I had some land that they wanted to drill for, I couldn't say, well, you can drill here, but you have to give me half. That there's a law that bars me from doing that. Okay, does anyone know the history of how that one got passed?
Yeah, I was just going to say a lot of the ways that the laws are set up in this country, it favors industries that use extraction, whether it be on public or private lands, especially on public lands. But in any case, they really do support industry more than the people and more than the people's rights. And that's something we have to change through Congress. It's just the entire Forest Service system, the entire mineral extraction industry in this country has a hold on the laws of the governments around here.
At the Seneca County Board of Supervisors meeting the other night, where they ultimately did pass a resolution in support of alternative number 4, no action, no drilling, the representative from Covert, the only one who favors drilling, as has been previously mentioned, said that he was a geologist and, in fact, was professionally involved in just this sort of drilling. He made a claim that they have, drilled wells right in the middle of a vineyard. Now, considering the description with the brine pit and the bulldozed topsoil, I find this very difficult to swallow.
Well, it's harder to say in this area. I know that most of the wells that have been drilled are in agricultural land and not in forest land, so there hasn't been as much damage because they didn't have to cut forest down to build the wells. I can speak for the Allegheny National Forest, where there are over 10,000 oil and gas wells. In that case, there have definitely been examples of water pollution, extreme detriment to the environment, scenically, recreationally. The North Country Trail, which runs through the Allegheny National Forest, has many access roads going right across it or right through it. I actually walked along a quarter-mile section that was moved because they wanted to drill for a road, or they wanted to build a road to drill, and you could still see the road real close to the forest. So I have seen, we have photographs of many examples of damaging of the environment, so I'm not sure why anyone would think that this could be not damage it.
To go back for a second, this is Larry again, to go back for a second to the question of the private and the public profitability issue, In the DEIS here in page 459, there's a figure, there's an illustration of the gas line, electric lines, and state roads, etc., in this area. There, this forest lies in the narrow belt between Cayuga and Seneca Lake. In the south, way south of Watkins, way south of the tip of Seneca Lake, there is a pipeline for gas. There is a pipeline for gas right in Watkins Glen, apparently. There is an electric lines going through. There are gas wells that New York State has set up on the other side, the west side of Seneca Lake, in the Sugar Hill area. But there are no pipelines set up running down from the north end of Seneca County, where there are several wells, through this area where the Finger Lakes National Forest sits, down to the pipeline that's way south that I mentioned before. And there also aren't that many easy ways to get there without disturbing all of the watershed that comes through, except maybe on the top of the ridge right through the forest. So the ultimate thing here, I think, that one could be paranoid about, if one wants to be paranoid, is that the plan would be, if there's gas here, we have to get it out of this area and tie it up with the line that's south of Watkins.
Well, this is Kathy, and I was reading our local paper the other day, our very local paper, and buried in the section about called Ovid Postscripts was mentioned some stuff about the opposition to the drilling, and then there was also a sentence or two about the National Regulatory Commission and a gas pipeline which was going in from Lake Erie to Westchester, and that line is a new line that's going in, and it goes across the top of Corning, Horseheads, and Elmira. So that's just more information. There is a new major pipeline going through. And I also noticed at the last Forest Service meeting, there were some, all of the local people in our, you know, Carhartts and T-shirts and maybe a few people in Birkenstocks, but there were these two guys in suits, I mean, fancy suits. And it turns out they were from Westchester County. Maybe they were visiting, you know, our scenic area, going on the wine trail or something, but that was just another odd thing that happened in the course of all the things we've done and seen while we're fighting this. And what you were asking about profitability, I mean, aren't gas companies all about profitability? If there wasn't some great profit advantage to drilling on the government property, they could be drilling on private property right now. They don't have to wait for this public comment period to go on. They don't have to deal with any of this, you know? The BLM at that last Forest Service meeting gave a projection, and they projected that when these tracts of land go up for competitive lease bids, maybe only 3,000 acres would be bid on. And then they thought the rest of it would be picked up at, they estimated $10 an acre. The draft environmental impact statement tells us that parcels that weren't bid upon in the competitive auction could go for $1.50 an acre. And then it's $2 an acre after the first 5 years. So even if they put in more expensive bids, lease bids, on up to 3,000 acres, that still leaves 13,000 acres that they will be picking up for $1.50 an acre.
This particular proposal could be part of a escalating assault on this area. This, from what you say, it gives me the impression of them trying to get a toehold into this forest and thereby expand their operations from there. I mean, is that what you're suggesting, Kathy?
Yes, I'm suggesting that the reason they're so it's only my own opinion, but it seems reasonable to me that why are they showing so much interest in this national forest? It is because they do need a central point from which to coordinate all this oil and gas activity. And it just happens that it was an unlucky choice on their part, because they came to this very small, very beautiful national forest that's already intensely used recreationally. It's a well-informed community. You know, this is not an illiterate community in Central America that they can just trod upon. You know, the people around here are well-informed. They know how to use the democratic process. You know, they've gone through all the steps, and, you know, it's created a lot of resistance to this plan that the gas companies have.
Since you have been quite successful in terms of the mobilizing people around defense of the national forest here, what advice would you have for people who are facing a similar situation elsewhere?
Well, I'm going to let Jesse give the advice because he's a better organizer. But I just want to make a remark, which is, I used to be involved in, you know, environmental activism, and I have a dear friend who's an activist on the Greenpeace ship, Rainbow Warrior. So he's out there doing big actions on an international scale. And he came to visit because it's so quiet and peaceful here. He wanted to decompress a little bit. And he's saying, we were working on some local stuff, and he said, you know, this is really great. And I said, well, this isn't very much, you know, compared to what you're doing. And he said, no, you know, this is the most important stuff. This local stuff is the most important stuff, and the most powerful thing you can do is make those phone calls and write those letters. And I never really took it seriously until he said that to me. And those words of encouragement from him really helped me believe that it was going to be worthwhile to put all this energy into resisting this gas development.
Yeah, what Kathy said is great. It really is all about us. We are important. We are this country, right? I heard a good quote once. It goes, in a democracy, the people get what they deserve. And it's true. If we want to stop these projects, we have to speak up. I know it's easier just to think somebody else is going to do it. It's not going to happen. The way our group got together, there were just a bunch of us that were interested in stopping this. We somehow made connections and we decided, well, let's have a meeting and we'll sit down and do it. And we'll organize something to stop it. And there was nobody else doing it. It had to be us, and we're just a bunch of citizens. So I would suggest if something like this happens, that you take the initiative, you research the issue, you go and see what you can do. You write letters to Congress. You write letters to the Forest Service, if that's the case, because there's nobody else that's going to do it if it's not you that does it. There are many groups out there that can help you, give you advice with what government agencies to contact and how the laws work. We can even help out with that. We have a website that has a lot of information on it. But the most important thing is to take the initiative and to do something, because if you don't, nobody else will.
Yeah, and I just want to add, you know, I'm eternally grateful to Senator Clinton for having the courage to push this to the national level so that it'll actually cross the president's desk. But in the course of going to these town meetings and county meetings, there are some real heroes out there. I mean, I saw a couple middle-aged women who had come from taking care of their grandkids and, you know, picking their corn and beans, not corn, it's not ripe yet, but beans and peas out of the garden. And they came to this meeting, you know, and there was every kind of strategy from different people on these, at this meeting to table this issue, to put it off, to delay it, to not decide, to wait for more information. And they just calmly and persistently and reasonably kept saying, we know that this isn't the good idea. We have enough information. We can decide this right now. And in the end, you know, that was the turning point in this whole process.
Can I add just two particular little things? One of the things that I sort of noticed, and I don't know if it's true generally or not, but this effort has been concentrated on the facts of this situation. The arguments have been about what is stated in the DEIS and what is how this forest is being affected. Therefore, a lot of people have been met on those issues, and it's been concentrated in that way, so that when we speak with the local legislators and with the public, we're dealing with specific questions here. And I think that's helped a lot. I'm not trying to make strategic, you know, arguments for particular strategies, but I've seen and felt that that's worked very much here. And secondly, there's been a lot of electronic communication. Jesse keeps mentioning his the website, which without giving the URL, and because he'd have to do that, right? And then we use a lot of email. We're constantly in communication with each other and with a lot of people. Just by, obviously, you all know, pressing the button and reaching 300 people at one time. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a few seconds to get your pens. We have a website, and we also have a listserv. There's over about 280 people on it right now. This is just used to update people of what's going on and how they can help. And if you're interested in getting on this, you should contact me off of the website. The website's the most important thing to write down. So it is the acronym for our group. You might want to write that down. It's the Finger Lakes Forest Watch Congress. And the website is flfwc.org. So F as in finger, L as in lakes, F as in forest, W as in watch, C is in Congress.org. And if you don't have a computer, though, you can call us at 607-220-4222. But if you do have a computer, or you can see one in the library, I highly recommend visiting our website. We've been keeping track of this for a long time, keeping track of the Forest Service for a few years now, and there's a lot of information there that will help you get activated and help you learn what to do. Again, if you have email, the listserv is a great way to get involved.
What are the things that people need to do right now, and how do they do them?
Well, again, our website has specifics on this. Generally, the two most important things to do right now are, one, contact your member of Congress in the House of Representatives and urge him or her to support the amendment that would permanently ban drilling in the Finger Lakes National Forest. If we get this, not only have we stopped the current drilling proposal, but we will stop all future proposals. But secondly, it's also important to write the Forest Service, postmarked by August 1st, the comment deadline, urging them to select alternative 4, because in the chance that the bill in the House doesn't pass, we still need to work on that front. You can call the Forest Service at 607-546-4470, and they can give you their address to send the letters to. Again, this contact information is on our website, and we also have a sample letter that you can use to form your arguments to send to the Forest Service, since we've picked through this DEIS quite thoroughly. So those are the two most important things. Contact your member of Congress and write to the Forest Service by August 1st. The Forest Service has to be done by August 1st. The Congress will be meeting again. We probably won't be deciding on this until early September. So there's some more time, but don't just put it off. Do it now when we still can, before we forget. Just to say, we have support from Congressman Houghton and Congressman Hinchey so far in the House of Representatives, but we want to keep reminding them what they said they would do, because it's very easy for them to forget.
What about other people in the surrounding area? Because this station is at the north end of Seneca County, and we have listeners that go into the edges of Syracuse and all along the top of the lakes as well. What about people who have congressional members in other districts? Would it be helpful to ask those members to support? And can the Congress help people, the Forest Watch Congress, help people connect with other citizens so they can send delegations to these members' offices? What recommendations do you have in that regard?
Well, yes, I would say it is important to contact those representatives. I believe Reynolds is to the north, and he is important because he is a New York State Republican, and the House is controlled by Republicans right now, and they're especially interested in local control. That's why it was most important to have Houghton supporting us, but other New York State Republicans are equally important. Democrats too. So contact your representative, whoever they are, and yes, we could help you find out how to do such a thing if you'd like to get in touch with us.
One thing that my name is Baron. One thing that we would like to do is certainly thank all of the countless numbers of people who have come out supporting the Finger Lakes Forest Watch Congress and in helping to do some organizing in this, and just really give a lot of thanks to all the people who have spoke their voices and taken a part in the democratic process. And we'd like to thank our Senators Hillary Clinton and Charles Schumer. And we would like to thank Representative Amory Houghton and Maurice Hinchey, Governor Pataki, for all coming out and speaking for the people and opposing drilling in the Finger Lakes National Forest.